Ready?
I guess I kind of could have figured that out. Good afternoon. The Conference Committee on Senate File 1753 will come to order. Welcome, everybody. I'm Senator Ellen Anderson. And we want to welcome a couple of folks who have come from out of town to be with us here today. And what we're going to do, we have actually a pretty short bill that we are dealing with today, so I'm hopeful that we can resolve the differences between the House and the Senate without too much difficulty, and maybe we can even do it this afternoon and still get home at a reasonable hour. Is that too much to expect?
No, that's a good expectation.
Okay, good. All right. That's a good place to start then. What I think we're going to do, in your packets, members should have the, what do we have? Why don't we have counsel explain the different versions we have here?
Madam Chair, members, there's the Senate file, and then the unofficial engrossment contains the House amendments. So basically, Section 1 of the Senate file is contained in the House file. There's Section 2, it looks like. Everything else in the House file does not appear in the Senate file.
So, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Counsel, you said that the Senate file is Section 2. Is that correct?
Yeah, why don't we have counsel just go through and explain? Why don't we start with that to explain the bill and explain the differences between the House and the Senate? If we could do that, that would be really helpful.
Well, Madam Chair, members, as I said, the differences are the non-appearance in the Senate file of a number of provisions in the House file. And the first one would be, you should look at the unofficial engrossment, the longer document. And Section 1 is a provision that relates to authorizing school boards to engage in building, constructing, owning, selling energy from wind energy conversion systems. This was necessary because a school district had sought to do so and had received an opinion from the Attorney General that they had no authority in current law to do that. So that's what Section 1 is. Section 2, as I said, are amendments that have been agreed on in both bodies to the low-income discount program that Xcel Energy is required by statute to operate. Those are identical. Section 3 in the House bill amends the current SIP law to provide a reporting and evaluation exemption for certain municipalities. It amends current law that already contains such an exemption, but states it in different terms, in kilowatt hours instead of revenue volume. Section 4 is an adjunct to Section 1. It allows the Commissioner of Commerce to give advice to school districts, and that was the intent anyway, focusing on school districts who would utilize the powers granted in Section 1 to operate a wind energy conversion system. Section 5 is a repealer of a budget billing provision that is thought unnecessary, agreed to by the industry and by the advocates.
And, Council, the last piece, the repealer, that is part of the bill that was in the House. That was part of the Senate language as well, right? So that's, no.
No. Madam Chair, I believe it was offered as a floor amendment and did not, it was ruled not germane, as I recall.
Oh, that was part of the amendment. Yeah. Okay. All right.
It did pass out of committee, however, as I recall. Wasn't it part of
it? Why wasn't it in the bill?
What happened to it?
Ron?
No, we didn't offer it. That's correct.
We didn't offer it. It just came up later. Yeah. Is that right? Or maybe it was an error?
Yeah.
Ron, maybe you can help us. Mr. Elwood, I'm trying to remember that piece, the repealer piece. Did we put it in a different bill? Go ahead. Mr. Elwood.
Elwood with the Legal Service Advocacy Project. If you're talking about the repealer part?
Yeah.
Well, the repealer was connected with the discount bill. That was put in the amendment. The piece of the amendment that was not germane, rule not germane, was the conservation, changing the conservation language for the municipal.
But this was part of that same amendment.
That was part of that same amendment. That is correct.
It ended up not getting on the bill.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
Got it. But that's part of your proposal with Xcel to. It's not really part of the low-income discount.
They were two separate bills, in the House they were merged together, and that we were trying to do the same to match them up in the Senate.
That's right.
And that the repealer, which was non-controversial, made it. The other bill, the other piece, which a little bit controversial and on the floor, didn't make it.
But it's not in the Senate bill, either one. Got it. All right. Thank you very much. I guess what I would propose, we do have a couple of witnesses to help us understand the different pieces, but I guess what I would suggest is maybe we should start with the ones that are agreed upon and see if we can even adopt them right off the bat just to keep us moving.
Sure.
And
sure.
Make sure we're clear, narrow the issues. And Tori, you just have to let me know what I need to do to make
you
sure
go ahead.
You have the information
okay.
You need. Okay, sorry, should have checked on that. Okay, so the language in which one are we working off the engrossment, the unofficial engrossment language? So the language that essentially is the low-income electric rate discount bill that it's all agreed to is Section 2, and that's identical between the House and the Senate. It's not controversial. I don't think we need any testimony on it, and I would suggest we might want to adopt that. Would someone like to make that motion?
So moved.
Okay. Representative Western moves the adoption of Section 2. Is there any further discussion?
Would you mind stating the lines on that, Madam Chair? Is that
sure.
Through page 2, line 24?
I believe so, yeah. And Senator, I know, yeah, and this is, yes. Any discussion, questions? All right. Hearing no further discussion on the motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Excellent. Okay. That's adopted. And then I guess the next piece, perhaps we should talk about the repealer next, and then we could talk about the municipals section. The repealer is Section 5 of the unofficial engrossment. It just repeals the budget billing language that is obsolete because it's been replaced several years ago by different budget billing requirements. And so it, again, should be totally non-controversial. It was a separate bill, and I think Mr. Elwood explained what happened to it procedurally. Would members be amenable to adopting that repealer language? Okay, Senator Gaither.
So moved.
You want to move that? Okay, Senator Gaither moves the adoption of Section 5, the repealer language. Any discussion on that? Okay, if there's no further discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion adopted. Thank you. Then the next piece that I guess we should have a very brief explanation of, if we could, would be on the SIP reporting requirements. And Mr. Oxley is here from the Municipal Utilities Association.
Madam Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Just while Mr. Oxley is coming forward, before I forget, Representative Larson, I don't believe, made it.
No.
And he talked to me yesterday. And he had a doctor's appointment with his mother today, and I told him if he didn't make it, I would let everybody know that he was excused and had talked to me ahead of time. And he may make it yet, but I said I didn't think it was anything controversial. So
okay, well,
that's why he's not here.
Just that's a good reminder, and just for the record, there is a quorum present. I'll announce that. And I see Representative Peterson in the audience. If you want, he could take the chair while he's if you want to have your chair filled up. But I didn't clear that with him either, so it's just probably a rhetorical suggestion, but he'd be helpful. Okay, with that, why don't we thank you for that explanation. All right, Mr. Oxley, welcome to the committee. And let me start by saying that before you explain this, that just for members' memory, what happened was I had offered the language that Mr. Oxley is going to describe as an amendment on the Senate floor to this low-income discount rate program. It was objected to and ruled not germane. And so I believe it's completely non-controversial language, and I certainly support adopting it as I was planning to offer it myself. But that's why it doesn't appear in the Senate bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Conference Committee. I'm Greg Oxley. I'm with the Minnesota Municipal Utilities Association. I'm here to comment on what the chair just discussed. Last year, the legislature adopted language allowing small municipal electric utilities to have a simplified SIP reporting process to the Department of Commerce. We use as our threshold for small $2.5 million in retail sales. We found that a few weeks after this legislative session started, we found that that was a very imprecise standard. For just about everybody, small is about 60 million kilowatt hours in sales, but we've got three or four munis that, because of high rates, because of power cost adjustments that they didn't have any control over, they ended up pushed into the $2.5 million category, even though their kilowatt hour sales doesn't even approach 60 million. Like Aiken is 2.7 in gross revenues, but they only have economic activity of 34.5 million kilowatt hours in sales. So we checked with the department and we've talked to the environmental community, and everybody's willing to accept 60 million kilowatt hours as the threshold instead of $2.5 million, and that's the whole crux of the amendment.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Oxley, there's a couple of other changes in here. On page 4, line 16, the change is that, well, the original language of the law says by June 1st, 2002, and every 2 years thereafter, the municipality or cooperative has to file an overview of its SIP plan. Mm-hmm. And the proposed change is to strike the date and to strike thereafter and to say every 2 years on a schedule determined by the commissioner.
That is very acceptable to us. I can't speak for the co-ops, but yes, it's acceptable to them as well. We'd run into just one of those glitches, but that's a very good change, and the department has discussed this change with us, and it's fine.
Senator Kubley.
Well, Madam Chair, I actually hadn't made up my mind if I was going to ask this. It looks like the language applies only to munis and co-ops, so this does not apply to IOUs that might fall below that threshold. Is that right, Mr. Oxley?
I wouldn't know. Mike Bull indicates from the department that that's true.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Oxley or somebody else may know, is there any IOUs that are under 60 million? Kilowatts?
I don't believe there are.
There will be when a new generation plant comes online out west.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, this does council.
Turkey litter?
Is it pretty clear that it's.
Well, that's 75 megawatts, I guess.
No, that's 55 megawatts, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking. It was 55.
And if Chair, I think we'll council clarify what the law says, if we could, council.
Well, Madam Chair, members, my understanding is there's a separate subdivision that addresses the SIP obligation of IOUs, so this has no impact whatsoever on it.
Okay.
We don't have to figure out what the exact number is.
Let's not worry about it then.
And so this would still require that the overview be filed every 2 years, but the schedule could be flexible.
Yes.
That seems fairly reasonable. And then the other change, I guess, is to say the overview and evaluation. That seems pretty minor. So those are I think that's the extent of the changes in Section 3 mm-hmm. that are that the House has.
I'd move the adoption.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Section 3.
Representative, go ahead.
Go ahead. No.
Representative Westrom moves the adoption of Section 3. I saw Lee Sundberg in the audience nodding. Do you want to say anything? Or you're okay with this, I assume. But if he's nodding, for the record, mm-hmm. the cooperatives are well represented here, and they're nodding. So this should be non-controversial language, and I would certainly support its adoption. Is there any other comments or discussion on that motion? All right, hearing none, on Representative Westrom's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Mr. Oxley. Who said that? Did somebody just say Madam Chair?
She just said thank
you. Oh. Okay, now I think the remaining language we have is Section 1 about wind energy conversion systems, and there's the section about the commissioner giving technical assistance to school districts. So maybe we should start by having the House explain the purpose and the intent. Senator Gaither.
Yes, just one quick, mm-hmm. Quick question here. Are we saying conversion systems or conservation systems? I'm looking at the language and I see energy conservation systems.
Senator Gaither, I think council actually has a couple of comments about that relate to,
okay.
and that is one of the errors that I think that we need to fix.
Okay.
So you're absolutely right, and What I would like to do is maybe have the House explain the language from their point of view. Maybe counsel can comment on some issues that he sees with the language, that, and then we can have some testimony that relate to that amendment as
Your
well.
Your pleasure, madam.
Okay. All right. Do you want to start, Representative Cox?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll give you a little bit of background. A few years ago, 3 years ago, when I was on the Northfield School Board, we proceeded to start examining the whether we could run a wind energy conservation or conversion system, depending on what you want to call it, to produce power, like a couple school districts, L'Aquaparle and Pipestone, currently have. We moved forward with that, but it didn't go quite as quickly as we thought. I left the board, came up here, and so forth, and the board continued to move on with it. As part of their process in getting ready to put financing in place and using some public dollars, they did ask for an attorney general's opinion on the appropriateness of doing that, and were a little bit surprised, as were a couple other school districts, to have it come back that no, the legislature had not actually specifically granted schools the authority to own and operate and produce power as related to their school activities. So that came up rather late in the session, and I ended up working with Representative Westrum and putting the amendment, Subdivision 1 here, on this bill to try to get at granting authority to allow school districts to go ahead and operate wind systems for power production. There was a concern on mine that we I guess I'll just say I have a somewhat of a concern about just giving schools the authority to produce as much power as they want and own as many of these things as they want, in that I don't know if it was totally appropriate to have school dollar resources committed to this in a large scale. And by that I mean if some school was out there wanting to put up a wind farm of 10 towers, whatever, and do it with bonding and so forth. If they had a community, on the one hand, I thought if they had a community that approved bonding to do that, you know, maybe it would be all right. On the other hand, I thought maybe we should have some legislative approval and review on that. So as you see in the amendment, tried to craft something that limited the size and scope of the power production if this would move forward.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Cox. By the amendment, are you talking about Section 1 now?
That's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So do you have, Madam Chair and Representative Cox, do you have a level of energy generation that you would suggest?
Well, what I used is, thank you, Madam Chair, Senator, is what I used was, the as you see the language before you in the bill, essentially limiting the production of power to the net cost of what they used the preceding year. So if you had a school district that used 1 megawatt of power, then and they would then be able to produce or sell, I should say, not produce. They could produce and use all they want in this, the way I see it.
So, well, Madam Chair and
Senator Kubley.
Representative Cox, so this section is not exclusive to your district?
No. No, absolutely not, because one of the other things I wanted to do is try to fix it, and Representative Peterson is here to address that for the two school districts that currently have systems. It put them on a little questionable ground with the Attorney General's opinion on that.
Yeah.
So this would apply to all school districts in Minnesota.
But, Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Cox. I mean, it seems to me that well, I'm sure it wasn't your intent, but it would seem to me that this section would unfairly discriminate against a smaller district. I mean, if we're going to have a limit on their capacity, and that sounds like an okay idea, I kind of like that idea. I mean, we don't want school districts to be net energy producers or to become energy companies, as you indicated, but I don't know. I guess I was, when you mentioned that piece earlier about, you know, maybe we should have some kind of limit on them, and I see this does limit it, but maybe it would be better to set the limit at, you know, just a certain number of kilowatt hours or a small number of megawatts, so that everybody is treated the same and large school districts don't gain a disproportionate advantage.
Representative Cox?
Chair, thank you. And Senator, you're absolutely right. This was crafted kind of on the fly very quickly as a way to address an issue. And since it did pass off the floor and we've had time to visit with a number of people about it, you're absolutely right, Senator. I think it would be good if this good group could come together with a number and if we could actually put a number, if we want to pick 2 or 3 megawatts, whatever, and say that school districts have that authority up to that level of production, or, you know, like I say, a number that's on there, so that we don't run into the risk. I think, on the other hand, it can be a little bit of a self-limiting basis, because I think if a school is a very small school and they were wanting to go out and put up a tower system, even at today's cost of, you know, roughly $1 million for a megawatt, I don't know whether they would be able to do that if they were so small that they couldn't use and produce enough power in the way that this is written, so that they would be limited on that. But we may see a technology advance, and in 10 years, they may be a small school district maybe could easily afford this. So let's all hope that happens. So I would agree with you, Senator, that we should try to focus on a number if possible and recraft this.
Well, I think that's partly why we have someone from Senator Kubley's district and from Senator Gaither's district, mm-hmm. both of whom have school districts that are interested in mm-hmm. in this or have done built turbines already. So we want to hear a little bit of testimony from the ground, so to speak, about mm-hmm. what would be appropriate and how to make this work. Because I think everybody agrees on the goal that we want to allow school districts to be able to do build a wind turbine, provide low-cost electricity for themselves, and try to set a good educational model out there for the community. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have one question. Do we have an agreement on the committee here that it is reasonable to put some kind of a cap in place?
Well, I think we ought to have some discussion about that. I'd like to hear from the school districts and hear what they say about it.
Okay.
And I think we need to have a better sense of what, you know, what they need to make these financially viable for them. Mm-hmm. What do school districts need to be able to do, and how do they? What kind of size projects do they need to be able to do that? You know, I personally don't have any problem with a school district finding a way to both produce their own energy and make a few bucks in the process to help defray their expenses. We all know that our schools are desperately in need of funds, and to do it in a way that they can, in a way that's directly related to a need they already have, I think it's appropriate. You know, I'm not suggesting we should get school districts out there being creating utilities all over the state. So we can talk about what the limit would be. But remember, a couple of years ago, we had a lot of discussion, I know, in the Senate about, and I can't remember if we passed this or not, but we talked about $30 million for helping schools defray their heating costs a couple of years ago when natural gas prices were so high. We were looking at using public dollars to help pay those bills. And so I think it's really a public interest for a number of reasons to try to help districts be able to meet their energy needs in a very sustainable way. So I'm excited about the prospect of trying to help them. But let's hear about some of the pros and cons of how small or big those projects should be. I don't know what the real range is that's out there right now.
Did we give Representative Cox thank you, Madam Chair. Did we give Representative Cox a chance to finish his explanation, or were you done? Or?
Oh, that's fine. That's really just background on where this came from.
Okay, great. And I know Council had some concerns about some of the details of the language in here. Do you want to mention those now?
Quickly, Madam Chair, I think there's 3 sentences in Subdivision 1, and they each have a particular target. The first sentence has to do with overcoming the objections of the Attorney General. Mm-hmm. And I think it could be changed a little bit to make sure that we have satisfy the Attorney General's objections and have authorized what they want to do. The second sentence has to do with...
Madam Chair, can you just read that sentence?
I'm sorry. The board may acquire... This is the first sentence in Section 1, Subdivision 21, Wind Energy Conversion System. The board may acquire, own in whole or in part, operate, or sell energy from a wind energy conversion system as defined in Section well, they actually say conservation, is defined in Section 216C.06, Subsection 19. I think you might want to add the notion of constructing. I think you don't want to use the word or. I think you want to use and. And it's possible you may want to add some language having to do with use of the proceeds, that they can use them, so they can sell it. And they raise some questions about the profit, so I think you want to make it clear that they can sell it and they can use the money. Mm-hmm. The second sentence has to do with the issue of limits on the ability. So this would be the limiting sentence. And the way it's written now, it's not what anybody wants, I think. So you have a couple of choices. One is a megawatt limit, or you could have a notion of something to do with the energy savings of the district or their use, which is very difficult to draft. And then the third sentence is the least significant, but I mean, I think it's okay. It just directs the school district to have a curriculum item related to the wind energy conversion system. So I think there's not much debate about that. So I think that's the issue. There's two sets of issues. One is, have we done enough to satisfy, have we done enough to change the law so that these districts can do what they want to do? And then two, if we don't want to give them carte blanche, just what do we do to limit that? And those are the sort of the two issues on the table with that subdivision, mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other comments from the members? All right, why don't we hear from the school districts and hear what they have in mind. That can give us a sense of the parameters of what they need. We have Lauren Hacker, superintendent from Canby. Welcome to
Madam
the Conference
Chair.
Committee.
Thank you for inviting me today to testify. Canby is a small rural district on the western border of our state, sitting at the edge of Buffalo Ridge. It lies in Yellow Medicine County, and I have always encouraged my legislators to support wind energy because it is, if you pass around the map I'm sharing with you, really obvious to you where the wind resource is in the state of Minnesota. I circled Canby and I've circled Northfield because I'm from Canby, and I know Representative Cox's school received about $150,000 in a Commerce Grant last year to put up a wind tower in conjunction with Carleton College, if I remember that grant project. And we have about a 50% greater turbine drive capability in Canby, and we have no wind towers in our entire county. There are a lot of factors that the legislature can help us with. And some of those are factors that are put in place by political and municipal and power company subdivisions. There's no doubt about that. And those are issues that I think the legislature is going to come to look at over the years, because by 2010, wind power will be the cheapest form of energy available to anybody in our country. That's coming from a recent wind energy conference I attended. Your current provision in this bill surely limits small school districts. We're a very poor school district. We have 60% free and reduced lunch. Our median income is 40% below the state income average, and we are energy rich in wind. If my school district owned oil resources beneath the ground on land that we owned, would you say that we should not tap those oil resources and help finance our school? If we were given four sections of land which had tremendous gravel resources under them, should we not dig out the gravel and help support our educational resources for our children? I think my constituents that I serve, the Board of Education in Canby, would say that no, we should use our natural resources for the best usage for our students. Placing any limitation on our natural resources that we could develop in a clean, efficient way in which our economy of the state of Minnesota wins, because we generate energy in our state. Our ecology, the environment wins, it's clean energy. Economic depressed part of our state wins because it's economic development. I'm not sure seeing where any part of any limitation at all, in my opinion, would help my school district. If, in Senator Cox's own words, the people of my school district really believe that is a way in which our children, we can help finance the education for our children. It's no different than any other district looking at the resources they have, whether it be multi-million-dollar homes around large lakes, or taking them off the tax rolls like the legislator did, or by agricultural land and taking it off the tax rolls, which the legislators did. I have nothing to tax in my school district anymore because we don't have any industry. Now you're talking about limiting the education about that industry, because it's all about education. Because if Canby Public Schools can put up a wind tower, and at each of our monthly meetings we're talking about how much energy we're generating, how much it's generating for the school, we take our children out there and talk about wind energy. We have two firms in our community that are actively involved in the wind energy. There's a wind smithing program at Minnesota West Canby Campus Technical College. All those things are in place, but still, we have not one wind tower in our county. There's something wrong with this picture, and we need help, not hindrance. So thank you for hearing me today.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hacker. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Hacker, so did I hear you say that you would not favor a limit on the megawatts that a school district could produce?
Correct. I mean, I think that's up to local control. The school districts are going to be in the business of power generation. I don't think that will ever be our intent. Our job is in education to do that. Currently, you know, and the reason why I don't want to limit it is currently, we can look at La Caprile Valley. They put up a 2.5 kilowatt tower 10 years ago. They're putting up 1.6 megawatt towers. That's the industry standard right now. Can that be changed to 3 megawatts in 3 years? You know, our experience says that we shouldn't limit technology, because you just can't imagine what could happen or did happen if we're limited to a kilowatt. You know, what happens if we have another quantum leap in putting up a turbine, and all of a sudden schools are limited by current law saying, no, we can't put up the most efficient turbine because this law that we set it at 1.6 megawatts, when the most efficient turbine to put up would could be 3 megawatts in 3 years. We don't know that. If it happens, you know, if it happens, school districts should have that option. That's my personal opinion. But it's about letting people make choices, you know. And if in your current form, you're really saying, in that map I passed on, there's only two school districts that can put up a wind tower: Marshall, Minnesota, and Worthington. At 1.6 is the most efficient wind tower to put up currently. Every other small school in that whole red area cannot put up a wind tower. So you're saying that large school districts can put them up, small school districts can't, and you're not even giving the citizens the chance to make that decision themselves.
All right, thank you. Representative Westrum.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Hacker, mm-hmm. You say they're the only two school districts. Are they the only ones that are over 1.65 megawatts? Or
well, under your current proposal, that if I understand the amendment correctly, you know, that would be of size to use enough energy to make it worthwhile to put up a wind tower. Mm-hmm. I mean, the current limitation in the current language that I read, it says, and I don't have it in front of me, so I don't want to make a mistake, but basically, in my estimates, how much energy
it
usage
has to match your consumption.
Mm-hmm. Right. But so if you build a 1.6 megawatt tower and you're only using 0.2 megawatts, you see, it's not an efficient tower to put up. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do anything with the other 1.4 megawatts of power. It's not efficient, yeah. So you wouldn't put it up. And I can't tell you, I mean, you can just roll it back, you know, 5 years, and with the size of wind towers that were being put up, I can't envision what the size could be in 5 years.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do think Superintendent Hacker brings up very important, good points. I don't think we should have something in here that is restrictive if we can avoid it on the small schools. I do have some concerns that, you know, there's other components to producing power. There's transmission for it, and there's how these things are being financed. And I, I do have some concerns that we don't open up a little bit of a can of worms where people may be running off to something, and then we get a whole bunch of schools that have signed up and have done something, and then in the future maybe they haven't been putting enough, for example, maintenance dollars away for these towers and so forth, but their budgets are built around the sales of power, and if they get into situations where now they can't afford to maintain them, so they have to turn them off or something, and we've got school districts then who have budgets built with this the dollars in place, you know, are we creating some kind of a little monster there? And I do absolutely agree with him, though, Superintendent, that we if we've done something here to restrict small schools, we need to look at that.
Council has a comment.
Madam Chair, I think just for background information, it would be helpful for the members to know the concept of the megawatt is, I think the idea behind the limit is the limit of a share. So I think as you'll see amendments or whatever, and even in this the bill as it is now, you could have a 10 megawatt project, for instance, but the share of the school district might be limited. That's sort of the, I'm not sure that's the right concept, but that's the concept that's been discussed privately. So when you say that, you know, you may limit the ability of a school district, I think we need to know a little bit more about what these projects look like, whether you partner or not. Because if you don't partner, what you said would be absolutely true. But if you partnered and were part of a bigger project, you wouldn't be limited by this language or the language that other proposed amendments I've seen, because you'd be limited to a share. So if there's a 10 megawatt project, you would be limited to whatever it is, 2, 3, 4, but there still could be the bigger project. But that, of course, depends on the practicalities of your particular deals.
Maybe we could have
Madam Chair, it's, you know, I'm just sitting here. I want to get one project going in my county. That's all I want, you know, because one leads to two to four. I have nothing to tax. 1.6 megawatt tower is not going away even after the TIF financing or whatever you use to finance it is. And you see what the potential is for taxation purposes for me to raise revenue down the road in my school district.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, thank you. Mr. Hacker, just on the earlier question, what is your consumption at Canby? Just, I'm curious what... What's can be used? Do you know offhand or approximately what, how many?
I can give you a dollar amount, and it's about $500,000 a year in electrical energy. So what we spend.
Okay.
Excuse me. Take that back.
Go ahead.
That's incorrect. It's about $50,000. Excuse me.
Mr. Hacker, has your school district looked seriously at a project, at the feasibility of a project at this point, or is it more sort of a wish list for the future? I mean, do you have any idea of what kind of return you would have to get to make it financially viable for your district, or would that kind of just be guessing at this point?
I have two proposals in my folder here if the committee would like to see them. I have one proposal by a firm that is an energy management firm that comes into schools, tells you how much money you can save by making retrofits in your economy. They're saying by putting up a 1.6 megawatt tower, the return to the school district is $100,000 a year, and they're in the business of guaranteeing contracts. Now, I think their numbers are way off. I think they're way too high. You know, I've talked to a lot of people. There's a lot of people in southwestern Minnesota that are involved in the wind energy. I've got some of my employees that work at the school. Their husbands and wives work at SMI that builds wind towers. EMS is a company that's 8 miles away. That's right on the South Dakota border that erects and puts up the nacelles on top of the wind towers. And like I said, we have a windsmithing program in Canby. I mean, we have a lot. This isn't voodoo science to people in southwestern Minnesota, you see. But we have restrictions. One of the reasons why we have no wind towers in Canby, if Xcel Energy was serving Canby, Minnesota, we'd have wind towers in Canby, Minnesota. That's the bottom line, and it has to do with what the legislature did with Xcel Energy. There's no, that's not any strange or new or different news, but if it's good for one part of the state and we have a wind resource that we can develop, help us overcome those barriers that are keeping us from developing wind resource in an area of the state that's underdeveloped. You know, I know that I'm addressing so many more issues here, but I can't help it when we're talking about wind energy.
Thank
you for giving me the time.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate it. I think it's important for us to understand what are some of the issues that you're facing, because I know we'd like to help you make it possible to develop wind in your county. It would be a good thing for our state, and
right.
certainly a good thing for your part of the state as well, for the economy, no doubt. We might not be able to solve all of those today, but we're we'll try to help anyway, and certainly help and not hurt. All right, are there any other questions for Mr. Hacker? Thank you so much for being here for your testimony, and I hope you'll stay with us, I'm sure, in case something else comes up. We had asked Mark Eilers to come as someone who is an expert on wind development, and I understand he has to leave soon, so I'm going to ask him to come forward. And if you would, thank you for being here. Maybe you can explain to the committee your credentials or background in wind. That would be helpful. And then I wanted to ask a couple of questions about, you know, related to what we've gotten into about what size megawatt turbines are coming in the future, that sort of thing. But could you start by introducing yourself, please?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Eilers. I'm working with GE Wind Energy. I've been in wind energy for some 10 years, worked with a couple Danish manufacturers as well. I am in the Minneapolis area and cover the Middle America region for sales and development. And so that's a little bit of background in it. I think you are correct that today our bread and butter machine is a 1.5 megawatt unit, and General Electric and DOE have just signed a four-year research agreement to bring a 5 megawatt unit, which is applicable to what we consider to be the low wind resources, not necessarily what you see on Buffalo Ridge, but those that cover most states, say, all over the Midwest, who aren't happen to be blessed with the tremendous wind resources. So I would say we are going to continue to see the megawatt size increase, the span of the rotor will increase, which means you can increase the energy captured. Thus, you're not going to see tremendous growth in the top part of the machine, but just in the swept area of the rotor, which gets you the higher nameplate capacity. So we are continuing to improve the technology, which means oftentimes increasing the nameplate per tower, which is ultimately the goal, because you can reduce the cost per tower.
So when do you think we'll see a 5-megawatt tower?
Well, the DOE study has a target of 2007 to 2008. So, you know, it's on paper what we want to see. Again, we have to worry about the logistics of bringing such equipment down conventional roads with weight restrictions, and we're talking about multi-piece blades and components that are actually assembled on site as opposed to becoming pre-assembled, because we're getting to the sizes that you just can't fit them down conventional roadways.
Those are going to be kind of amazing to look at, I would think. Wow.
Again, it's not, you know, you can't look at a 200 megawatt and a 200 kilowatt and a 1.5 megawatt and assume it's just going to be that much bigger. What you'll see is improvements in efficiency and mostly the increased diameter of the swept area. So you're not going to, the rotor length will just become longer.
Well, members, I would think that, you know, certainly we want schools to be in the business of educating students and not in the business of being electric utilities. So I understand that concern that we don't want to go overboard here. But I guess maybe what would you think would be, you know, something, if we were going to set some kind of a limit that would last us at least for a few years, you know, in what kind of a wind turbine might be seeing on the scene somewhere in Minnesota? Is 5 megawatts a reasonable limit? I mean,
it is hard to predict in the future. I think 5 megawatt would be an adequate cap given what we know today about research technology. I would rather go with a megawatt size as opposed to an energy size, a kilowatt hour size, just because it can be a little bit apples and oranges. You can, you know, figure out what a 5-megawatt wind turbine can produce and a great wind resource and a moderate wind resource, and they can be substantially different kilowatt hours. So it just seems a little bit arbitrary. And so the megawatt, basically the nameplate rating of a turbine, I think would be more appropriate. And, you know, without looking in a crystal ball, I would say 5 megawatts, just knowing what we know today, would be appropriate for the coming 5 years.
Thank you, Mr. Eilers. Representative Cox.
Yes, I think if we started looking at a number like that, I think that would also get to the current issue of as we've heard, Northfield's looking at a 1.65 megawatt, and they seem to be the kind of standard right now. So if you had a district that was wanting to put two up, you would still be falling within that range right now, and I assume for the future, and then handling these new ones. And then at some point in 10 years down the line, if this had to be revisited or whatever, it's easy to do, change the number.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's helpful. Senator Kubley?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Eilers, you know, how much height are we talking about adding to the towers if you go to a 5-megawatt generator?
Well, it's all on paper right now, but obviously you would probably have to go closer to a 100-meter tower, 120-meter tower, and then, you know, you are going to be... And that's some of the constraints, in addition to transportation, is how big of a tower can you go with, how high of a tower. So our currently we have an offshore unit, which is just under 4 megawatts and sits on a 100-meter tower. Of course, it's off in the water, so you may not, you know, you can have some little bit of an advantage in terms of height restrictions and where the blade touches the ground.
So the 1.5 megawatt towers, how tall are those in meters?
Either 65 meter or 80 meter. And again, we only offer the two because sometimes it's more advantageous to go up higher because the winds are better. So it's a trade-off that the developer needs to assess, because obviously every pound of steel is more money. Mm-hmm. But if you can capture more energy, the benefits are to be had.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. Are there any other questions for Mr. Eilers? Thank you very much for your
testimony.
Sorry
to go early.
Oh, no, thank you for being here. We appreciate it on short notice. Okay, why don't we hear from the Wayzata School District then? We have Mr. Hopeman.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gaither.
If I may, Mr. Hopeman is coming to the desk, provide to the committee a little bit of background of where we are with this. Wayzata School District is actually located in the city of Plymouth. And the proposal that Mr. Holtman is going to be speaking to is going to be on the Wayzata High School. This is more than just a concept. I was first brought aware of this when I served on the Citizens Financial Advisory Council for the Wayzata School District, and talking about energy costs when natural gas costs were so high prior to coming to the legislature. And this idea was generated through that citizens group, and it has progressed through several levels. We have had wind tests on facility that I think Mr. Hopman can speak to. We've gone so far as to have the city zoning ordinances changed by the Planning Commission and approved by the City Council to have this project constructed up at the high school. So we are considerable steps down this particular path, and being in a suburban school, it might not fit the normal paradigm where you consider to have a wind-generating system in place. But I think that it's a relevant background to this committee to let people know there has been a significant amount of spade work done at this point. So with that, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Holtman.
Great. All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Holtman. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Alan Hopeman. I'm the Director of Finance and Business for Wayzata Public Schools. Senator Gaither did mention our high school, Wayzata High School, is in Plymouth. We're quite excited about the prospect of putting up a wind turbine at Wayzata High School, in large part because of the educational value. We think it would be a tremendous educational resource. We have science teachers, industrial technology teachers, social science teachers that are all excited about it and thinking of ways that they could incorporate that into their curriculum. And frankly, I think the students are kind of excited about it, too. They once in a while and ask for an update and run it in the school paper and so on.
Mr. Holtman, can you move the microphone just a couple inches closer?
Sorry.
Yes.
We did have the meteorological test tower put up. We don't have the strong resources as you do in Canby or other parts of southwest Minnesota. But we do think we have a good site, and that's one of the things that we think is exciting and kind of unique about Wayzata. Our high school is in northern Plymouth. It is bordered on the west by undeveloped land, golf course area, and some city playfields. The south end of the campus is largely our own playfields, and then on the south border you have some residential development. So the residential development is fairly well separated from where the wind turbine would be located on the north part of the campus. And then further north from the campus and to the west is Elm Creek, and it's wetland, and it is there's a large amount of city recreational property, park open space property, and there's wetland that is not developable. I mean, it is really wet and will never be developed. So the site has the advantage of not being disturbing to neighbors, and for we think that there aren't very many sites in the metro area that could offer this advantage. And in addition, then we have 3,000 kids on that campus every day that we think could learn a lot from this, and we think would be symbolic of the energy future that we hope to see in this country. We have applied to Xcel Energy for a renewable development grant, and we're waiting to hear on that and are hoping for that. The turbine that we're talking about putting up is 1.65 megawatts. We think that we will only put up one. I cannot foresee any circumstance under which we would go any larger than that. And that, of course, is the nameplate capacity. We would not be impaired by the language in the House version of Senate File 1753. We consume about $1.2 million worth of energy in our buildings. As the bill is worded, its total energy cost, that includes our natural gas expense as well as our electrical expense. But about $1.2 million, and the revenue from a wind turbine would probably be on the order of $100,000 to $150,000 gross revenue, so it wouldn't impair us. If you change the concept of the limit, I think 5 million or 5 megawatts nameplate capacity would be very comfortable for us. We're looking at 1.65, and I just can't foresee us wanting to put up a much larger unit than that. I think we'd run against community acceptance issues. Right now, we've sensed a fair amount of community support for this. The city of Plymouth has changed their zoning ordinance to make this an acceptable use on public property, and they've been quite supportive of it. So we're hoping to go ahead with it. But we do need the language in this bill in order to allow us to do that, given the Attorney General's opinion that came down recently.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Holtman. Senator Gaither?
Madam Chair, thank you. And again, to the members, my objective in today's conference committee is to provide an expanded operation or opportunity for the smaller school districts, as well as dealing with the Wayzata school district. So I want to make sure we go on record as that my position is, while this particular language would not affect Wayzata's property or their project negatively, I see this as a wonderful opportunity on several fronts, and I want to encourage members to consider what possibilities we can come up with to make this a viable opportunity, both in not in just my school districts, but in the school districts around the state. So I just want to make sure we get that as a matter of record and where my perspective is.
Thank you. Representative Westrom.
Thank you. I forgot your name.
Holtman. Alan Holtman.
Holtman. Mr. Holtman, so do I understand your tower will be actually adjacent or contiguous on the property that your campus is on?
That's correct.
Okay. And it raises an issue, and I've thought of this, and I don't know that our language covers it, but this is mostly just a comment, Madam Chair, but it seems to me that not every school district could even put up a tower if they're going to have any serious incorporation of it in their education policy. And I don't know, I'm just wondering, because if it's not adjacent or where the kids can see it on a frequent basis, just being located 50 miles to the west and taking a bus trip out there once a year, to me, doesn't seem to meet the purpose of an educational experience. But I'm wondering if that's something we should consider, is having it, you know, within a reasonable distance of the school or something. I realize not every school is sited in a spot where it could have a tower, but I mean, it seems like we don't want to have them 50 or 100 miles away with just a field trip out there once a year.
Representative Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Picking up on what Representative Westrom said, I do think there is some mild concern on that, too. I have met with Xcel Energy to talk about their wind cameras, and I think that there are a lot of opportunities for small districts that maybe will never do this, or ones that are landlocked into metro areas that just don't have the wind harvesting capabilities. If they're interested in it, I think there's going to be some action that's moving forward on that, or Wayzata Schools getting them up and sharing it through the Internet. It can really work well. But I also do want to pick up on something Senator Gaither said, and that is the amount of work that the school districts do put into this. Northfield, we did our test tower. Department of Commerce or whatever. We were lucky to get a grant to help us out with some of this stuff. But the site selection, we also had to do changes in the zoning ordinances for our county and so forth. So there's a lot of work that goes into this. And I don't think it's just something that a school district would enter into in any area on a very short notice or whatever. But I also think there's great community support on it. In our last bond question, our school board was actually thinking about asking for bond approval to do this. That's what triggered this whole thing. They did not end up having a third question on their bond referendum, but they did have a polling firm, Decision Resources, I think, gather information from the voters on it, and came back with really some information that was astounding to them, which was there was over 80% support in the community on this cross-sectional level on that. So there was really good support in that. And again, I don't think you'll find that in every community, but when you do have it in your school district and there's a desire to incorporate it into the curriculum and do what's needed, I agree with Senator Gaither that we need to try to make it, whatever we have to do to make it so it works. This works for Northfield, and I'm glad that it works for Wayzata, and it probably works for a lot. But as I've learned after putting this out, that there are some small ones. As we've heard testimony from Superintendent Hacker today, we may hit some that don't have that, and I think we can fix that today.
Okay. Great. Any other questions for Mr. Hopeman? If not, thank you very much for being here today.
Good, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
All right. Members, we don't have anyone else we've specifically asked to testify or who has contacted us and asked to speak. I don't think there's anyone here from Northfield. Is there from the district who wanted to say anything? Okay. I get a sense that we've got that we're approaching a possible consensus here. I hope I'm right. What do members think if we were able to put something on paper, which actually council pretty much is close to having ready anyway? Representative Westrom, go ahead.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess at this point I can't say that I'm comfortable with 5 megawatts. We had talked about 2 once. I've heard 3 talked about. Listening to the GE representative, 3 would be 2 of their 1.5 megawatts that they sell. But I guess I'd be more comfortable with a lower cap because in revisiting this in 5 years, if the technology changes, we don't know for sure. They're just soliciting grant dollars and. They might find it to be a bust as well, but I've got a concern that school districts, in some instances, could be approached by venture capitalists and with their ability to bond and raise revenues that way. I just have a reluctance and. A too big of a cap that could turn it into a profit venture rather than a business venture, which displaces business opportunities for farmers and entrepreneurs in our communities, and some would argue that it even at a different an advantage because of the access to capital that they may have. They got reserve accounts that perhaps could be tapped. And so I guess with all those questions, and I don't know the answer to all of them, I wish this issue would have come up earlier so we could have had committee discussion. But because of that, I guess I would be more comfortable with a two megawatt cap, maybe max three megawatts. But there's a lot of unknowns that I just am concerned we would stymie some entrepreneur opportunities, maybe fairly or unfairly. But I don't know the answers to that, and I guess I would suggest maybe we look at two or three and revisiting this issue if that in fact looks like it's going to impair development or opportunities for schools to use these for their own use and educational purposes.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm not clear. I mean, if we're going to put a limit on the number of megawatts, are we talking about generation capacity, or are we talking about a generation level that the school district is able to sell? I mean, you know, the wind doesn't blow 100% of the time, at least when your representatives and senators aren't around. But it's a question I think that could be addressed. Because capacity and what's actually generated are not the same number.
But, Madam Chair, I think they'd be talking nameplate capacity, which, oftentimes, I mean, that's what that turbine produces on its max ideal performance day.
So, Madam Chair and Representative Westrom, then, could you assume then that if the wind did blow all the time that they would be able to sell the entire amount?
Well, sure. They would be offset by their electricity usage, whatever that is. I mean, for a small district, a smaller amount. For a larger district, a pretty significant amount. So that would be, it would be reduced by that amount. I mean, certainly we want them to use the electricity to the as much as they need, and not just build it for the purposes of selling it. I think that's reasonable to expect, that if they could sell the excess is really what this is, I think, what we're arguing about is. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do believe that I would agree with Representative Westrom that we should focus on nameplate rating because, again, we may get into situations where certain school districts really have very little ability to sell for some transmission problems that I know that keeps cropping up with us. But they may be able to have the wind system configured so that they're simply augmenting their own power needs.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Cox. I'm not sure that every school district will have. Well, I suppose that could be arranged. But I mean, will every school district have the capability to supply their own needs in addition to, moving power into the grid? Or will they simply be able to go one way and then have to buy it back? You know, I guess that would be a question that I don't know. I guess I'd like to raise that question for consideration.
Madam Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Which is exactly the reason I guess I would say let's deal with the real problem was just line one, which was the AG's opinion that didn't allow schools to operate wind turbines. And there are some questions that I think your committee and my committee would rather have explored, but it came at the late in session. And so I don't know that I think we should limit what we do with this conference committee to deal with some current issues and a reasonable proposal, but certainly anything a bill can come back if there's some further development that's stymied because of it or projects stymied. But right now we don't know of any, and this would make everybody legal, including a couple that have already done it and didn't know of this opinion.
Who had their hand up? Senator Gaither.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We're dealing with an emerging technology, and we're dealing with an emerging concept at this point, with school districts venturing into an educational opportunity, a power generation opportunity, potentially an income opportunity. And I think we need to reward and make sure we encourage that type of innovative thinking and that kind of development. So I want to make sure that we keep focused on how can we make this happen. And what do we have to do to encourage this kind of thinking and creativity? Because I think we should reward good behavior, and I classify this as good behavior. And so I want to make sure we stay on that message. And if we come down to what's it going to take for this group to get consensus on a particular set of languages to move this forward, if that's a cap issue on the rating of the machine, and it's a 3 megawatt or 4 megawatt or 2 megawatt, whatever the number is, I think we could focus on that and get that resolved, because I think that's probably the one thing this committee can do. And as we visit this, and as technology improves, and as we've got this in the field for beta testing, and it's actually producing electricity, we can perform some sort of analysis on what we've accomplished with this legislation, what the school districts are facing, and fine-tune this machine as we go forward. So I would be encouraged as to focusing on how we can make this go with whatever cap the chair or the members feel would be the reasonable level of authority for the school districts.
I appreciate that, Senator Gaither. I think that's helpful. And, yeah, let's remember our goal. I hope that we all share. It's a really good goal and very positive, and we're glad that you brought us to this discussion and brought it to the table. And I guess just one other point. I'm envisioning certainly the strong possibility that a district that might want to do something like this could have excess electricity, which could become a great resource for their community. If they need a new building, if they need a city hall, if they need an ice rink, you know, there's all kinds of possible ways that it could be beneficial without it having to become a concern about selling it or the utility having to buy it or whatever, or transmission. I mean, there's lots of ways this could end up being beneficial without having all those barriers come about. Representative Cox.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. One thing you said reminded me that in leading up to this whole amendment, this whole thing that came as a result of this ruling, we should be aware that school districts can enter into joint powers agreement, and they are not. Then this is all moot at that point. If, for example, if they went in with a school or a city and created, and that's what made me think when you said selling power. At that point, it's a joint powers, and they're not restricted on it.
So the city could do it already.
Yeah. Okay.
Without we assume the Attorney General doesn't mind that.
That's right. we, however, could not quite work that deal. That we did explore that first, and the city was not ready to do that.
Well, Council and I came to the same little idea here independently, sitting at the table. If you add up 1.65 megawatt towers, two of those would be 3.3 megawatts. Maybe that would be a good compromise number that everybody could live with at least for the indefinite future. I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there. Mm-hmm. What do people think? Senator Gaither.
Madam Chair, that would be acceptable to me.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be a good option, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. I think we could live with
Western?
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. That sounds really good.
Nope.
Don't hear any disagreement. I better not ask if there's anyone else who wants to say anything. Let's quit while we're ahead here.
Yep.
Well, there you go. That's pretty simple. Maybe that's what we should do then. Mm-hmm. And we know that's a nice round number that works for two some of the most popular or usable wind turbines that are out there right now. So at least it would get us through the next few years, I think, probably, successfully.
Council, do you actually have language drafted that we can vote on? Or
I think he has one amendment that makes those changes in the House language that he had described that would have to just technical corrections. And then the other language...
It's close.
He's got it ready to go. I mean, it's a couple pieces of paper together. So I think it's...
Do you want it distributed?
Sure. Why don't we pass that out? And so we just have to make a couple of oral changes to make it work.
Rip off the last page.
Okay. All right. So this is a packet of three pages, and just rip off the last page.
Take off the last page.
Yeah, that's when
I did the last page.
Take off the last page. That you can discard the last page. That's some other version of something.
So we don't deal with the last page.
Yeah, just toss the last page. I don't even know which version that is. So yeah, we're looking at pages 1 and 2, or 1 and 1. They're titled the A7 Amendment and the Alt-2 Amendment. And I'll let counsel explain. Or
Madam Chair?
Hang on a second. Okay. And I think that we should do it.
Okay.
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 All right, I think counsel, what we'll do is have counsel explain what, do you want to say first what the changes would be to these typed amendments, and then you can maybe read the whole thing?
Certainly, Madam Chair. On page, on the Alt-2 amendment.
Second page.
On line 3, not exceed, it would be the number 3.3 megawatts, and after megawatts you'd insert of nameplate capacity. So I think that reflects what was discussed.
Yeah.
And then why don't you just, if you would, just read the whole, what
okay.
The whole thing would be all put together.
Madam Chair.
That change.
Page 1, line 15, after may insert construct. Now, the first, this deals with the authorization to do, for the school district to do what the Attorney General said they couldn't do. And as you'll notice in the bill, it says acquire, own in whole, in part, operate, or sell. I think adding construct might be helpful because I think that's what mm-hmm. they're going to do in that. Should do. I think we should clearly state the intent that they can operate these things and do what's ever necessary to you know carry out that activity. I think that's what this does. Then on line 16, the word your or is used in connection with the string of activities are authorized. I think it should be and. They can do any of these. And then and does include or under legislative parlance. So they can do 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 or any of them. And then on line 5 of the amendment, this might be sort of a placeholder, but I think it works, but you may want to polish it. It's the issue of we're authorizing them to sell the energy, and this amendment sticks in the language and retain and spend the payment received from selling that energy. It might be an excess of caution, I don't know, but that's the thought there. Page 1, lines 17, 23, and 24, we're just correcting the conservation, the conversion, just a misspelling, I guess. Page 1, line 18, when those deletions all the way down to line 12 on page 1, that's just getting rid of the second sentence, which we refer to as the limiting sentence, which had to do, and now we're going to the language on Alt 2. So you see it says Alternative 1, Alternative 2, Alternative 3. We can cross out 1 and 3, and we're going to the language that I'll talk about in a second on the 3.3 as a limiter. And then we're recommending that you delete Section 4, which... if you turn to page of the unofficial engrossment, well, Madam Chair, it's neither here nor there. On page 6, line 3, it says they can now serve school districts with wind energy conservation systems to all units. Well, these school districts are units of local government. And my understanding is this was inserted at the time for reasons of floor germaneness, necessarily. And that's fine. But if you want to leave, but I don't think it's necessary. They already have this authority.
Right, well, we can discuss that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then we're speaking to the insertion that replaces the limit in the unofficial engrossment, and that's the Alt 2. This is the limiting. So we're authorizing to do it, but we're saying the board's share of the installed capacity of the wind energy conversion system authorized by this subdivision must not exceed 3.3 megawatts of nameplate capacity. And I point out on line 1 the word share. As I mentioned earlier, I think this was put in with the notion that the project itself may be larger. So if that's not comfortable to you, I think that's what that language is meant to do, that their share of a project can be no more than 3.3, which to me means that the project can be bigger than 3.3.
Yeah.
So that's something you may want to discuss. I don't know.
Well, then, Council, maybe one more time, just read the final language of the two paragraphs, if you would.
Madam Chair, the board, may construct, acquire, own in whole or in part, operate and sell, and retain and spend the payment received from selling energy from a wind energy conversion system as defined in Section 216C06, Subdivision 19. The board's share of the installed capacity of the wind energy conversion systems authorized by this subdivision must not exceed 3.3 megawatts of nameplate capacity. And then back to the unofficial engrossments. A board owning, operating, or selling energy from a wind energy conversion system must integrate information about wind energy conversion systems in its educational programming. This section is effective the day following final enactment.
Okay. On that language, and then we can talk about the, well, whatever. If you want to talk about the commerce part, too, that's fine. Representative Cox.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Language that we've now got before us here.
Would someone like to move that, just to put it in front of us?
I will go ahead
okay,
and move
Senator.
It.
Okay, Representative Cox moves the language.
Okay, thank you. Now I'm wondering if maybe we want to drop the board chair, because it almost sounds like we're a little confusing here, and to just change it to the installed capacity of the wind energy conversion system authorized by the subdivision must not exceed 3.3. The only reason I say that is I don't know if we're creating an animal that's a little hard to measure.
Now,
if we're referring to nameplate capacity and board share. So tell me on that, Council, if you could. Would you, if somebody had a proposed 5-megawatt plant, could they dedicate 3.3 to the board?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Cox, I think that was the thought behind it, that if you had a 10-megawatt, the answer is yes.
Okay.
But then the thought was that if you had a 10-megawatt project and they partnered with somebody, mm-hmm. then, and that was the most sensible business proposal going forward, they could take no more than 3.3.
They could only operate, construct, sell,
yeah.
and retain the proceeds from 3.3 megawatt nameplate worth
okay.
of.
Okay.
That's correct. I think it is. It does complicate it a little bit, but I
understand it, though. But if that's yeah, if that's the interpretation there, that's fine. Yeah.
Representative Weston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, on that, essentially, if they joined up with a. Private developers in their community or the city or somebody else. I mean, if they owned part of the business or owned part of it, they could only own 3.3 megawatts of ownership. On a 10-megawatt project, basically, they could only own 33% of the project.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I'm sure. I believe that's the
yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, it does say own. I mean, all the authorizing language would be limited by this, I would think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it's. It reads. What about, okay, and then what about the Commerce Department? Representative Cox, is that important to you? Or do you have
no,
a feeling about that?
You're absolutely right. I believe, Madam Chair, I believe that was our vehicle that made this all work. And
oh.
Yeah.
You in pulled the fast one?
Well, in case there was a challenge on it, I think that there wasn't. It was nice. But I think that if that's what this was all about. Because I do believe, I know we have been getting technical assistance and everything else, and I think they are doing that now.
Okay, and it already says, yes, provide to units of local government, yeah.
which
the school district
which
is,
school
correct?
District, so I think
okay, so that would be, that is actually part of Mr. Fuller's language,
yes.
is to delete that language,
yeah.
if you're right with that. Senator Gaither.
Yes, Madam Chair. Going on the record, not my strong suit here, but if you've got the word conservation replaced with the word conversion, line 17, 23, and 24, is there any significance for not replacing it in lines 19 and 22?
That sentence is deleted.
Oh, that's right.
That's one they're called.
Like I mentioned, it's not my strong suit.
Well, that's a good question.
Thank
just
you.
Want to make sure.
All right.
Okay. All right. So we have a motion in front of us. Any further discussion?
Okay.
All right. Let's proceed to a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Senator Kubley?
Well, I was just going to ask if we had a motion that we were voting on.
Representative Cox,
make this a motion?
Representative Cox moved the language.
All right. Sorry, yeah. I missed that.
As explained by Mr. Fuller. So.
Very good.
Is that
I
okay?
Vote aye.
You, okay. The motion really prevails. Yeah. Okay. Representative Westrom?
I don't know if there's anything else on this bill in front of us other than the there was a issue or discussion about the legislative auditor and the $100,000 appropriation authority. Have you given any more thought to that? Or maybe I haven't even talked to the department whether or not they've thought about seeing if this could be a vehicle to just give them that authorizing authority or not. But what's that?
I'm sorry. I was just trying to ask Mr. Jurofsky a question here. Okay. Representative Westrom is raising the issue of this is something the Senate members haven't necessarily seen before because it's not in our – it's a separate issue. Maybe you could explain it.
Well, I think what's happened is in the House we passed an authorization to use the Energy Task Force levy that's already approved under law to help pay for the SIP review audit that's going on through the Legislative Auditor's Office. We passed that in one of our finance bills. I believe the Senate's passed it in one of in their finance bill, and in the event that neither of those finance bills go somewhere and we don't get them passed by the end of session, it would be helpful for the legislative auditor to have this authorization to use this money that's already been levied or approved levy for to help pay for their outside experts if they need them for the audit that they're doing of the energy conservation program. And so we passed it in the House and Senate, as I understand. This could be a vehicle that we bring that language in.
Go ahead, Senator Kubley.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Westrom, do you have some language available?
What's that?
Do you have some language available we could look at? Or?
I think it is available. I don't actually have it right here.
Yeah. You have it brought it with copies?
I think Mr. Garvey would just add a couple comments on it if...
Let me start first of all by saying this language is not in either in file 1753 on either the Senate or the House side. And so when the legislative auditor, they did mention this to me a few days ago that they would like to see us put this in this bill, but my concern is that we are pretty strict in our rules about not putting in language in a conference committee that didn't appear on either side in that bill. And frankly, if you'll recall, on this very bill, I attempted to put an amendment on that was non-controversial, that was Mr. Carnival is nodding, that was the language that the municipal utilities had requested, and Senator Hahn challenged the germaneness of it, and it was ruled not germane, and the Senate kind of is a watchdog about stuff like that. And so... I really like this bill. I promised Mr. Elwood that I will try to pass this bill. And I'm nervous about trying to, and I said this to the legislative auditor that, you know, I would think the Senate, some folks in the Senate would be uncomfortable with putting some language in that didn't appear in this bill on either side. That's not something we do very, very lightly or very commonly. That's my concern.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess in the interest of seeing the bill pass, I guess I'd suggest that we not add this amendment. Just, you know, so we don't run into a big snag on the Senate floor.
Did we pass it out? Did we pass out the language?
Mm-hmm. It did, yes.
Okay. All right. Who's next? I think you both. Representative Cox?
Well, I would just add that I do believe that Representative Westrom and I can probably say that we wouldn't have problems with this on the House side.
Mm-hmm.
But I will really defer to you because I do want to see this bill pass. And we've done a lot of work on it, and I appreciate you taking this as a conference committee and everything. It's good. We've got school districts here.
Mm-hmm.
As Superintendent Hacker is sitting in the room to let us all know that want to do something. And Senator Gaithers and my own districts. So I would hate to see it come up if you know your body, and if you think it's at risk, I will defer to you.
Representative Westrom?
Well, Madam Chair, I just maybe I don't know what Representative or Senator Gaither thinks. You think the problem would come from just from the Democrat side or the Republican side or just some people that play watchdog no matter what it is? It isn't the first time a conference committee has pulled something else in that's passed both bodies. I know that, but it's just a matter of what they're going to play watchdog on.
Well, Representative Westrom, I can think of members on both sides of the aisle who have been known to jump up and down about things that are perceived as breaking the rules, absolutely. But Senator Gaither.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And how shall I phrase this diplomatically?
you
want to whisper
so
it in my
well.
Ear?
Yes. In taking a look at the order of priorities, and first of all, I think that this is a worthwhile endeavor, the amendment that we're talking about. I think it's a good study. We should be doing that. But collapsing these two conversations together at this point may increase the difficulty of this dive to such a degree that it may be difficult for most of us to execute. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are members on both sides of the aisle and potentially a person in the middle of those memberships that that may look at everything through a certain filter that let us not let perfect get in the way of good.
Senator Gaither, that was very diplomatic.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Cooper.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Westrom, I guess maybe I'm not as diplomatic as Representative but, you know, there are, like the House, you know, there are a certain number of members on both sides of the aisle in the Senate who like to talk while the cameras are on, you know. And so it seems like they'll jump up and talk on any topic. It doesn't make any difference what it is. It's probably a smaller number because we have fewer members, but it seems to me that tends to be true.
Present company excluded.
Well.
Well, I wonder if we could put all of our efforts into trying to make sure we pass a budget bill. That would be really nice, to pass a budget bill. I think we'd all like to see that
happen.
Could
we come to an agreement here? I can go report it to the Speaker that we'll agree on 7 conference committees.
How about 3.3?
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting the feeling that you feel this would jeopardize it in the Senate, which... Probably.
I don't know, but I just would hate to have that take that chance. That's my only concern, and I just don't.
And Madam Chair, I would share that again. I think we've worked well together as a group. I think that we've done good work here, and good public policy is in place. And it seems like when everybody's smiling and nodding, it's time to make the stage right.
Yeah. If you'd like. Okay, I guess if Commissioner Garvey wanted to say something briefly, we will certainly hear from you.
I don't really have a need to say anything given the constructive conversations that have already been had.
Commissioner Garvey, you got any idea on what this conference committee should do?
We're not going to force you to testify, really. That's up to you.
Madam Chair, members of the Conference Committee, Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce. My advice is that you've done extraordinarily good work this afternoon. Call in an afternoon and, you know, head home for the weekend.
we'll have to find another vehicle, Mr. Garvey, if we can't get a budget bill through. I think that's what it's coming down to.
Madam Chair,
Commissioner Garvey,
Representative Westrom, the legislative auditor and legislative auditor commission has agreed to do an audit of the state's conservation improvement program and how the department is implementing it. We think that that's a very important thing that they're doing. We think that in order to do that to its fullest, it needs to have some resources. If we can't do it this way, if then the budget bills fail, we will struggle to find the resources that the legislative auditor needs within the department's own resources.
Okay. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much. All right, council is raising a small issue here that we might want to consider as we try to wrap this up. And I guess I can try to state it that are there districts out there that have already built wind turbines that are in any jeopardy because of this Attorney General's opinion? Do we think that there's some reason why we should make this authorization retroactive to make sure that they're not hit?
You want to bring out a few more watchdogs?
I know. it's complicated, but I don't know. Wait. Yeah, that does raise some difficult issues. Retroactivity always does. Representative Westrom.
Mr. Fuller, is there a way in the language to just say any may basically refer to any machines in the future or that are currently operating, which would be kind of an implicit way of saying this law applies to you if you're operating also, but I don't know.
Well, it does say the board may operate.
Yeah, operate.
And that implies present tense.
Mm-hmm. Well, Madam Chair, my only thought is if somebody had whispered to me that it might be a problem, mm-hmm. and so I was wondering if the conference committee would just give instructions that if, in fact, there is some specific issue with relation to this that you wanted us to look into and maybe include it in the conference committee report. If there's not any specific identification of a problem, maybe you don't want to do it, but if we find out that somebody's being sued or I mean, I don't think that's the case, but somebody said there was a couple of districts that have been doing this already. It's not a big deal.
So when you say include it in the report, include it in the minutes?
No, that you may, that, I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, that you would
change the bill.
Them.
Yeah, change the bill.
Change the bill.
But that, yeah. It might be simpler. I mean, the Attorney General's office certainly has more important things to do, I think, than go after school districts that have built wind turbines. I don't think it's a big problem. I mean, it's something that could come up in the future, but I guess it might be. We can sort of say our intent. And this language is present tense, that our intent is that this is effective the day that it passes for anyone who's operating a wind turbine, and so hopefully that would cover most people, and unless someone brings the problem to our attention in the future, hopefully that would do the trick. Representative Cox?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you said two important things, when the bill passes, and so that's why I think we need to pass it. And I'm comfortable that when we have the word operate in there, I guess if somebody wants to ask how you got this thing you're operating, they can delve into it all they want, but if they're operating it and we have this in place, they are, in fact, operating it.
And, you know, a school district who did it in good faith, yeah. I don't think has anything to worry about anyway, because there was no there was no reason to know that they were not authorized.
That's
to.
Right.
So I think we're on pretty safe ground.
Good.
All right. So I think the magic words here are we just ask council to prepare a conference report that reflects the motions that have passed today and as approved by this conference committee. And then we'll get the language and get it around to all the members for signature. Is there anything else I need to say to make this official? Mazel tov. All right. Yeah, okay. All right. With that, if there's no further discussion, we'll get the report out just as quickly as possible. And members, thank you so much. This has been very productive and quick work, and I feel.